Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning. It is Wednesday morning, the 20th of June, and the sun is rising. It certainly has risen on the East Coast. It is rising here in the Midwest, and it will rise on the West Coast shortly. But all over the country and all over the world, what remains true is the tomb is empty. Jesus has risen, and that is good news indeed. For because our Savior lives, there is always hope and always future in his beautiful kingdom. You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined in studio by Matt Reynolds, the last day substituting for Logan Roush. As ably as you have here, Matt, we're talking about the Wally Pipp situation with Logan, and we'll see, you know, maybe he doesn't ever have an opportunity again. We'll see how this goes for him.
You know, I think Wally Pipp can have it back. No offense to you or anything, but, you know, I like my sleep a little bit.
Oh, I see. All right. So a little tension in the studio this morning. We'll have to sort this one out. And glad to have you. You've done a great job on the boards.
Thank
and
you.
Show producer Paul Perot in the newsroom. Grateful to him and to Rachel Sutton for booking these guests that come on and just help us sort through the headlines of the day. A couple quick things here before our break and we get with our first guest is we're not going to talk a ton about the immigration situation today, not because it's unimportant, but because we did a lot of coverage of it yesterday. And two great guests, Tommy Binion and Bruce Ashford, really helped us walk through a lot of the dimensions of that. I really recommend going to faithradio.com and checking out some of their thoughts that we have from the tapings yesterday. And also bruceashford.net. He's got a great article there as well. But one of the headlines, Matt, that really caught my attention this morning was, it says this, police in Dunwoody, Georgia say thieves were able to steal a load of electronics from a Best Buy store by rappelling down from the roof. Sergeant Robert Parsons said it was a Mission Impossible style burglary, and they got away with more than $100,000 worth of Apple products from the mall, which really means two Mac computers and maybe an iPhone, right?
Absolutely.
So are you a part of the cult of Apple?
No, I have not given in yet to the unnecessary spending, I guess.
I mean, we've got five kids in my iPhone home. They're all in the Apple ecosystem. I'm sort of the lone PC holdout here. I don't know if it's good, but, you know, it's hard not to cheer on the thieves, at least to some degree, when they're rappelling down to the roof. So enjoyable, you know, morning headline to wake up to here. So we've got 7 minutes past the hour, and we're going to be joined here on the line next after a short break by Andreas and Margaret Kostenberger. They are theologians, and we're going to talk a bit about parenting and how we can help walk through the difficult situations with our young people in today's culture. So stay with us. We'll be back in just a minute. God of mercy. Good morning. It is 8 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. I am Dr. Peter Kapsner, and we are joined by our first guest this morning, and that is Margaret and Andreas Kostenberger. Margaret is an associate professor of theology and director of women's programs at Shepherd's Theological Seminary in North Carolina. And Andreas is recently accepted a position as research professor of New Testament and biblical theology at the Center for Biblical Studies at Midwest Baptist Theological Seminary. That is a mouthful. Good morning, you two.
Good morning.
Good to be with you.
So I have to ask to start, what does date night look like for the two of you when you go out as theologians like this? What's the conversation over dinner?
Well, we often talk about our children.
You do.
And, you know, some of the challenges we face in parenting and some of the joys as well. We have four children, ages 25 down to 16. So there's always lots to talk about.
And I find with the older children that you have, it's a little different. One of the most common living situations these days for kids in their 20s is still to be home with your parents. How have you been navigating that transition to adulthood with your kids?
With our children, they've gone to college when they were 18 or 19, maybe 17, depending on which child it was. And from that point on, gradually established themselves in their own living situation. They'd be home during the summers, that kind of thing, typically. But, yeah, so we just have one child, 16-year-old Timothy, at home right now with us.
Well, the reason why we have you on is you've written this great blog post just a couple of days ago, and it's titled The Missing Ingredient in Our Parenting. And that caught my attention. I was curious as to what the missing ingredient might be. And what you argue for in your article is the idea that really character development is what we need to focus on with our kids, even above achievement. Can you talk a bit about what is underpinning your thinking on this?
Well, yes, I think that our culture in general is very activity-oriented, and we tend to define our identity and our self-worth often more by what we do than who we are. And I think that also comes through in what we value and how we go about parenting. We feel a sense of accomplishment when our children get good grades, when they get a trophy in sports, and so on. And by comparison, we're, I think, often less focused on character development, in part because it's harder to measure growth in character, and also because developing character in our children takes a lot of time, and we just have to continually be committed and keeping engaged with our children. But I think Margaret and I believe that we treat ourselves when we measure our success in parenting by our children's achievements. It looks good on the outside for some time, perhaps even many years, but eventually tends to catch up with you when you've raised children who are well-educated and even accomplished, but who lack solid character.
Well, I think that is the tension, isn't it? Because we want our kids involved with things, but it seems like these days, and I don't know what you find, is that it's not quite the same. If you want to get involved in an activity of some kind, whether it be music or athletics or something, it becomes almost a 24/7 kind of job to build a resume, and you can focus for years on achievement versus character.
Right. Yeah, definitely. It's in the long run, I think we're setting our children up for struggle and conflict and failure, maybe in their personal lives, when we have the focus on those kind of achievements as opposed to character, which should undergird and help us decide how much effort and energy to put into each of these things. We want to help them succeed in their private lives, in their relationships, in their marriages, and when they become parents themselves. So, yeah, we need to step away from our achievement orientation, reflect on how we can cut back maybe and change our focus on prizing character, you know, ultimately the Lord and his character development in our children. So that kind of thing.
Well, and I love just so much of your article talks about that character development piece of it, obviously. What would you suggest to families and parents that are maybe running a bit ragged, that as they're just going from thing to thing to thing, trying to help their kids get ahead? How do you take some first steps back to get off of that hamster wheel and begin to think about what it means to develop character?
Well, it's a bit countercultural to do that, but so it takes some courage, I think, to take a deep breath and to sit down as a couple and to reevaluate. And I think you made a good point a minute ago when you talked about the fact that often, especially sports, can be very time-consuming. I remember when our son was on a travel baseball team, and it occurred to me that we spent sometimes entire weekends on the baseball field, often just kind of waiting around.
Yeah.
And that, you know, it occurred to me that may not be the best stewardship of our time. And so we ended up encouraging our son toward other activities that were less time-consuming, and we could diversify, and we simply had a little more time to just hang around the house and to spend time together as a family.
And I think that's a trick, right? Countercultural is a good word, because you can end up feeling like you're being left behind from what everybody else is doing. And yet,
yeah,
what you begin to see in your kids and the fruit that's being born over those years. Can you speak a bit about what it means to have a primary voice in your kids' lives as opposed to maybe delegating parenting to outside organizations like schools and stuff?
Yeah, you know, I think that's another great point, because if you delegate parenting to others, whether it's daycare or schools or even youth pastors, I think that's often the easy route to go. It's a way of seemingly being able to have the best of both worlds. But I think ultimately it may not be biblical because you're the parent, and yet you feel like you're doing a good job as a parent because you're providing for your children a place to get educated, even a spiritual environment in the church or youth group, or so you think. But at the same time, you know, you think you're able to pursue your own career and hobbies. But the problem is God made us parents, and he gave us the responsibility of being our children's primary caregivers. So parenting, my wife and I found, can't easily be delegated to others, no matter how competent or how qualified they are. There's simply no substitute for a mom or a dad in a child's life, especially in a child's early years, but also during the teenage years.
We're speaking with Andre. Go ahead, Margaret. Love to hear more.
No, I was just going to say, in the early years, it's especially essential that the parents are present and in the child is in the home and not delegated to a caregiver. That's a year when, you know, a child develops trust in his parents. And in later childhood and teenage years, the young people will develop a sense of identity and independence. And we want to be involved in that, not giving it away to others.
That's great. And so we're speaking with Margaret and Andreas Kostenberger this morning. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to address what kind of character are we talking about in terms of developing this within our children? And what is the process? How do we partner with God in this as well? You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and we'll be back in just a minute. Just about 19 minutes past the hour, and we're joined on the line here on Faith Radio Mornings by Margaret and Andreas Kostenberger. They are both theologians working in seminary, but more importantly, they are parents. They have four children, and they've done a lot of work just in a variety of ways, helping people like me that have five kids. Matt, you have four, just thinking about what it means to raise our children. And I know on the website, thegospelcoalition.org, you've actually written an entire course called Parenting, Equipping for Life. Tell us a little bit about this.
Yeah, so it's based on our book with the same title, Equipping for Life, a Guide for New Aspiring and Struggling Parents. And that course uses that book, Equipping for Life, as a textbook, but it's free. And it's laid out in 9 chapters following what we call the 3 R's of parenting, to be realistic, relational, and responsible. And there's interviews, there's study questions. So I think it's an ideal resource for young couples, for small groups to go through that and to use it as a tool to reflect on how to parent and also to discover what is a biblical framework for parenting.
And again, you can find that at thegospelcoalition.org. If you just search Parenting Equipping for Life, you'll find this great free resource, very in-depth and helpful. I know so many young families, and I'm dealing with young students too, as they're getting married early, just overwhelmed by the responsibility of parenting. So great source for this. And we're talking specifically too about your article that you just posted called The Missing Ingredient in Parenting, which has to do with the development of character for our kids. And so I'm curious, you talk in the article a bit about how you hold the balance between being overly authoritarian in our kids' lives versus just being their friend and kind of pampering them and catering to their needs. Can you talk a little bit about that balance as parents, where we're shepherds and guides, not friends, not, you know, tyrants at the same time?
Yeah, well, I would say that that's a great question, but not necessarily an easy one to answer. We've had the experience of actually schooling our children at home or from home, at least for the most part of their lives. We've had a couple of breaks, you know, where they've been in a private Christian school or even a public school. So we do want to have them to have opportunity to develop friendships with other children who will have positive influences on them. But we need to respect our children as well as persons in their own right, especially as they get older, give them the privilege to increasingly make their own decisions. So that's a start to the answer this question. Maybe, Andreas, you can pick up here.
Yeah, I think, you know, we certainly should teach our children to accept responsibility for their own actions and their own choices and to develop a good work ethic. In many ways, children who are schooled out of from home prove to be the ones, in my experience, who are better at accepting responsibility for their choices and their own education because they're used to more freedom and having more of a say in what they learn and how they learn it. For instance, our son, who was homeschooled in grades 11 and 12 after going to a Christian private school in grade 10, his last 2 years of high school were almost like he already went to college. And then when he actually did go to college, he was ready to manage his time well. He had developed solid study skills, and he was a leader who others looked to for guidance and advice.
You know, and we've had the opportunity to homeschool our kids for some of their journey as well, and I love the benefits of that. They've also been in public school, and there's some benefits to that as well. Can you help us, for parents that are not able to maybe school their kids at home and they are in the public schools, how can they continue to best have a voice in their kids' lives when there's other voices kind of crashing in all throughout the day?
Yeah, well, our experience has been on the lesser side in terms of the public school situation, and in all honesty, it's been a more of a challenge than a benefit in our experience.
Sure.
I think maybe some of the academics have been good, but so we really strongly do advocate people to consider schooling at home. So that would be one thing to even address that. Is that a possibility? But to have a voice, I guess, you know, to be a parent involved in the school and the different activities and, you know, volunteering and that kind of thing, good to be around and know what's going on. And that's the main thing I could say for that.
Yeah. And Margaret, you said earlier in our first segment, too, that as we're voices in their lives and we're helping to develop character, we're not doing this alone. God is present and with us. And you mentioned again in this blog about what it means to partner with the Holy Spirit in character development. Can you say more about that?
Okay, so the Holy Spirit obviously is the key ingredient in terms of the power and the persuasive, influence in our children's life ultimately to affect change. And we're just, you know, stewards of our children for the time that they're with us. And so parenting before a child becomes a Christian is very different than parenting after a child becomes a Christian. Before they become a Christian, maybe we're cultivating the ground and we're teaching, you know, and encouraging character development and that kind of thing. But when they become a Christian, we can appeal to that aspect of their life and encourage that in their lives as well as they develop their own relationship with God and their own character, alongside the work of the Lord in their lives.
Mm. And Andreas, does character happen within about 6 seconds of parenting? I mean, I think sometimes we do things and we want immediate results, but talk about the process.
Exactly. Great question. So again, in Equipping for Life, we have a whole chapter on character development, and I think it's probably one of the more important ones. Some of the virtues that we specifically focus on is diligence, humility, discernment. And diligence, for example, would simply be a matter of helping them to finish what they started and to make sure that, even when they get tired or bored of a task and want to give up, that we come alongside them and help them to develop a solid work ethic. And as I mentioned, it'll pay rich dividends when they go to college and we're no longer right by their side and they have to operate on their own. Another important character trait would be humility. In the book, we talk about the fact that sometimes as parents, we may not be setting the greatest example in that regard. We might brag about their accomplishments on social media. So I think it certainly starts with us ourselves, modeling proper humility, but for them to not take pride so much in their accomplishments or their achievements, to not be self-promoting and, compile an impressive resume when they're older, but for them to understand that Jesus taught that humility is a distinctive mark of those who follow Christ.
Yeah, and then there's another key virtue that we focus on, which is that of discernment. And we think that's key for young people growing in their knowledge of the Lord and their life. You know, Proverbs is a key book which we try to encourage our growing children to, be familiar with and to have that impressed upon their lives. We consider it to be one of our primary goals as parents to help our children develop skills in making good decisions in every area of life. So it's like you said, discernment's not developed in an instant.
Yeah.
So we can help them build discernment by mentoring them in the truths of Scripture and by engaging them in continual discussion about the challenges that they encounter and helping them develop a love for the Lord and the wisdom from His Word, you know, advising them in relationships and counsel them in decisions that they make, et cetera.
So helpful. We're speaking with Andreas and Margaret Kostenberger. We just have a minute left, but I would love for you, if you don't mind, just to touch on the role of grandparents in this whole journey. I think it, you know, these days it feels like it can be helpful to have all hands on deck with our children. Can you talk a little bit about the role of grandparents?
Absolutely. You know, talking about character development, of course, if we coordinate with the grandparents and they're on board with focusing on that rather than just, you know, pampering their grandchildren, they can be our allies as well in challenging our children to integrity and honesty and diligence. And again, not to so much focus themselves on, you know, praising them for accomplishments, but to ask some probing questions on, you know, are they pure in their character and in are they righteous in their dealings with other people? They can read the Bible with our children. They can pray with them. They can give godly and wise counsel and advice in conjunction with the parents. I think the bottom line is that there's no shortcuts in parenting. You know, parenting really never ends. It's a process. And that's why we called our book, you know, Equipping for Life, because we want to equip especially young parents to understand that parenting is a lifelong investment in our children. It's extremely rewarding, but it's also very time-consuming. It takes lots of time, takes a lot of sacrifice, but it's wonderful to have that growing relationship with each of our children.
Andreas and Margaret Kostenberger, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Great stuff. Would love to have you back on the program. Again, if you're listening, you can go to thegospelcoalition.org and see Parenting, Equipping for Life, as well as the article recently posted, The Missing Ingredient of Parenting. We'll take a break for Lighten Up, and we'll come back, do the news, and head into the second half of our first hour. You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner. 32 minutes past the hour. Matt, loved the conversation with the Kostenbergers. I've heard people say that in parenting, the days are long, but the years are short. And I find that so true, and they're real helpful voices. Let's take a break for news. And when we come back, Dr. Kent Kaiser is in studio to talk about communications and some of the headlines of the day. And those bagpipes they're signaling that Dr. Kent Kaiser, Chair of Communications here at the University of Northwestern St. Paul, has joined us as part of his regular weekly segment. And you talked a little bit about playing the bagpipes last week. Have you done any bagpipe work in the last 7 days?
Yeah. And by the way, that tune is called Dr. Kaiser's Monster. My instructor wrote it for me. We had a competition in Chicago over the weekend. And my band came in 6th out of 14 in our category, which is pretty good considering there were two people who had never competed before. And the better band came in 4th in their category. I don't know how many bands there were, but this is the biggest bagpipe competition in the country that we were at. It was about 95 degrees, and there we were in our wool kilts and, you know, long sleeve shirts and ties and vests and everything. But it's a good time. It's just fun to see people from really across North America who show up. So
give me one criteria, like what separates the champion bagpiper from those who finish 14th?
Oh, well, you know, when you're playing in a band, just everybody has to memorize the music, and to be absolutely together on every note is what separates the real champions from kind of novices. I mean, you know, if you're really experienced, when you're really on with your band and with the drums and everything, where you're just really well coordinated. But, you know, a newer band, it's going to be a little looser.
No, it's I love that you have your original score for the walk-up music here on that. And yeah. So, well, let's get into some of the headlines. Obviously, immigration and what's happening down at the border is kind of the top of all of our minds. And as a communications person and chair of the communications department, I think it's interesting how different sides of this are trying to seize the communication narrative. Democrats going one direction, Republicans another. Just kind of talk about what happens in these situations and how different groups are trying to seize that story and what's really happening.
Well, it is interesting to see how the Democrats, of course, are focusing on the separation of children, and it's an awful thing. But on the other hand, you've got parents who are coming in here, and it's not clear when, and they're only temporarily separated, and it's just while they figure out whether the parents are truly looking for amnesty here, or whether they're or asylum here, I should say, or whether they are illegal immigrants. Are illegal aliens and trying to sneak into our country. So are they criminals or not? And so then the question, or are they drug runners or whatever they might be? And so the flip side of that is if you don't separate the kids from the parents, then what you're doing is you're throwing the kids in prison with the parents while all of that gets straightened out. Well, that seems to me to be even worse than putting the kids in the, separating the kids and putting them in the places where there are, you know, fairly decent conditions. I mean, they're in air-conditioned places with toys and, you know, good conditions compared to a prison for sure. But it does go back to the fact that their parents are trying to sneak across the border, and that's really unfortunate. And hopefully it's a, you know, hopefully their future, in the future, fewer people will try and sneak across the border because they'll see that this is what's going to happen. Now, meanwhile, I mean, this is a very interesting political strategy. I think it's actually starting to work for President Trump, where since he's doubled down and said we're going to continue with this policy, now, finally, last night he met with Republican leaders in Congress, and it seems like they're coming up with some plans to try and solve this problem, which is what Trump has wanted all along. He himself has said that he's opposed to this policy of separating the children temporarily at the border from their parents, and the way to resolve it is to change the law. So, again, hopefully the Republicans will come up with some kind of a plan. It's interesting because they're the ones who stand to lose in the election that's coming up. Trump doesn't because he's not on the ballot. And so if they do come up with some kind of a solution, I think that people look back and say, okay, yeah, his strategy, political strategy, did work, as sad as it is that children are maybe being separated from their parents temporarily down there at the border.
Well, and it's we had Tommy Binion on yesterday from the Heritage Foundation, and he mentioned, as he's working in Washington, D.C., that they could really just come up with a four-page document in a few hours to at least address the most severe parts of the crisis. And yet both sides are constantly trying to win the narrative, and so they end up with these 100-page documents, 200-page documents to get everybody in. Do you see hope that this can be resolved relatively quickly?
Well, I think it needs to be. I think that, you know, for the sake of the Republicans who are running for re-election, they're going to want to get this resolved very quickly. They keep saying, well, if Trump would only delay the enforcement of the law for 6 months. 6 months, good grief. You know, they should be able to sit down. I mean, this isn't a new problem. This immigration problem has been there for years, decades, really. And so they shouldn't need much more than a week or two to get this straightened out, and I think not just piecemeal. I think they could do a wholesale reformation of the immigration system if they wanted to.
Speaking with Dr. Ken Kaiser this morning, chair of communications at the University of Northwestern St. Paul, and speaking of President Trump, he's come into our neck of the woods, specifically a couple of our affiliates in Twin Ports and Northern Minnesota, as well as Fargo, are going to see the president descend upon them. I mean, what sort of some of the community you've worked in government and communications, kind of talk about behind the scenes what goes into a trip and a visit like this.
Well, it's interesting to see what's happened there. They've actually had to move to a larger venue in Duluth because they sold out, if you will. It's all free tickets, but they got rid of the tickets so quickly that they had to move to a larger venue, like right next to where they were going to be. I think it's interesting to see this kind of a – this is clearly a political rally. It's taking place in the 8th Congressional District of Minnesota, which has flipped back and forth between Republican and Democrat only very recently. It was for a long time a solid Democratic district, but now it's considered to be one of the ones that's potentially – a victory for Republicans, which is currently held by a Democrat. And so I think President Trump is coming in there to help the current Republican candidate, Stauber, to build momentum behind the campaign, as well as to help other Republicans in that region, because that region, Trump actually won it by quite a bit, which is remarkable. Republicans typically lose that district by quite a bit. I've seen only one other Republican in the last 20 years who's won up there, and it was marginally. And that was because much of the district is Duluth, and then the Iron Range, which is Union, which is a Union stronghold. But what we've seen with President Trump is many of these Union workers and officials are coming around to him because they agree with his trade policies and policies that will help mining, for example, which is what the issue is up north near Duluth. And so up there, I think he's going to have a lot of enthusiasm. There's obviously going to be some protesters, as you always will find. I think I have one student I know who's definitely planning on going, and some other friends who are going to be there with President Trump who are public officials. But it'll be interesting to see the enthusiasm that can be generated and what will happen in that district this fall because of President Trump's support. Right when Pete Stauber was first announcing his candidacy, he received a call from President Trump offering his support. And so the president really does have an interest in this specific district. I think that by going to Fargo next week, the president is probably looking not just to generate support in North Dakota, which he won by a landslide, but I think he's looking at northwestern Minnesota and trying to help statewide candidates who might otherwise who really need to win in greater Minnesota. Because if you're a statewide candidate, like, for example, Karen Housley, who's running for U.S. Senate, she's from the Twin Cities. She needs to be strong in rural Minnesota in order to win statewide, because the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul will vote overwhelmingly Democratic. And so she really needs a strong, strong showing up out in the rural Minnesota, including the areas just east of Fargo in Minnesota and then around the Twin Ports and Duluth and the Iron Range.
Well, and it's fascinating because the political map, it seems like the last couple of years, is getting a little bit torn up. I mean, we're seeing Democrats that are being elected down in Alabama. We're seeing Minnesota, historically very much a Democratic state, and we're seeing Republicans maybe. And that brings us into, and we'll talk about this after the break, there's a recent ruling from the Supreme Court on gerrymandering. I'm not even sure I know what gerrymandering is, much less to say it right. So I'd love for you to walk us through kind of the redrawing of the political lines and maps. So let's take a short break. You're listening to Dr. Kent Kaiser. This is Faith Radio Mornings. We'll be back in 1 minute. It's 12 minutes before the top of the hour. You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner, and joined in studio by Kent Kaiser, Chair of Communications here at Northwestern. And Kent, before the break, we were sort of transitioning from the idea of Republicans and Democrats and the political map sort of getting ripped up these days. There was a ruling by the Supreme Court that had come before them on the issue of gerrymandering. Can you just tell us what gerrymandering even is and then sort of the implications of the ruling?
Right. And this ruling was relevant to Wisconsin. That's where it originated, by the way. So for our listeners there, they might be familiar with it more than others. But gerrymandering is the word that we use to describe the funny-shaped congressional districts that are formed after the census. And it comes from – it's a portmanteau of two words. There was one of our forefathers, Elbridge Gerry from Massachusetts. It's his last name. And salamander put together to come up with gerrymander, because back in the day when you looked at the congressional district maps, some of them looked like there was a salamander there on the map because they were so funny shaped. And today they're even more funny shaped. And what it is after the census, we need to redistrict, as it's called. So the lines are redrawn for the congressional districts because the population in each congressional district is supposed to be exactly the same in each state. So after every 10th year after, you know, like, for example, coming up here after 2020, we will have a redrawing of the lines. Well, what's happened over the years is that Republicans have taken control of many state legislatures and governorships across the country and therefore have controlled this redistricting process, and they have drawn the maps to their advantage.
And they can just draw maps every couple of years, or how does this work?
Every 10 years.
Every 10 years, yeah.
And so they've drawn these maps to give themselves a political advantage. In other words, they will draw the congressional districts in such a way that there are just enough Republicans so that they make it a Republican seat, which otherwise might be a Democratic seat, or maybe they make it a safe Republican seat, or they pack, you know, they make it so that all the Democrats are in a couple of districts. And so, you know, in a state, you know, might have several Republicans, just a couple of Democrats, because all the Democrats are concentrated in a couple of congressional districts as they are drawn. And it cuts both ways. It's, you know, if the Democrats were in control of the state legislatures and had done the hard work of winning those, they would have the power to do the same thing and have in the past. But I was joked to my Democratic friends, if you wouldn't amass all of your population in a couple of states on the coast, then you might have a chance of winning more in the middle, and you'd be able to redistrict for yourselves. But they don't. They all move out to California and New York and stuff, and so you wind up with these real imbalance in Congress. But part of it is this redistricting and gerrymandering. And what the Supreme Court determined was that gerrymandering based on political affiliation is okay. Now, they've said in the past that it's not okay to gerrymander based on race. So you can't draw districts and include just all the black people or all the Hispanic people or whatever. But in the case of politics, they've basically, some people said they just sort of punted because maybe they'll make a decision on this in the future, but they ruled 9-0. So even Ruth Bader Ginsburg and the liberals voted on the side of Wisconsin in this case, or on the side of you know, those who have drawn the lines in the past. So that's what gerrymandering is, and that's where we stand with it.
Yeah, it's fascinating to see a unanimous ruling come out of the Supreme Court. Right. That is so rare when you see something like that.
Right.
So changing the conversation, maybe one last topic with you. You had mentioned that there was something that came out among the tech giants that they're advocating for eliminating bias and censorship. What does this even mean, Ken?
Well, it's actually a conservative coalition that is advocating with the tech giants, because right now the tech giants are really not allowing free speech, or so is the at least that's a perception among conservatives. And so these conservative groups are saying there are four points. They should provide transparency. So in other words, if they're going to disallow certain posts on Facebook or Twitter or YouTube or whatever, then it should be transparent as to exactly why those posts aren't being allowed. Secondly, they should provide clarity on exactly what constitutes hate speech. All of these companies have different definitions of what hate speech is, and what it turns out to be is just something that liberals don't like. And so if they could come up with a better definition, that would make it, you know, better, more worthy of, you know, the United States and free speech, actually. And then they also, this conservative coalition is also calling for equal footing for conservatives, because a lot of the like YouTube and Google and so on, they'll work with liberal groups, but they don't work with conservative groups. And so that's another concern. And then finally, they're suggesting that, in fact, all of these tech giants should try to mirror the First Amendment and pretty much allow free speech, except in the cases where the Supreme Court has said that you could disallow it, for example, with obscenity. Now, it's interesting to look at sort of the history of some of these companies. When Twitter first started, they touted the fact that they were this free market of ideas, and to see where we've come from there, where they disallow specific tweets or where they block specific people because they disagree with what they've said, even if it's not obscenity or even if it's not calling for harm to other people. You know, it's quite ridiculous, and it's really not in the spirit of the First Amendment, and it's really, if you ask me, un-American.
Mm. And the tech giants that are referenced in this article, it's Facebook and it's Twitter.
It's Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. It's the social media that we use. That's what they're really concerned about, is the social media that we all use.
Yeah. And I read a quote the other day that said, in a liberal and pluralist society, the public interest is served and not undermined by difference. And so, as opposed to that, we all have to think the same way. There's real a lot of healthiness in expressing different kinds of ideas together.
Well, right. And what's happening right now is, like, you know, we look at how partisan the country is, or how how there's been these rifts, I suppose you might say, between people. And if you look over time, by the way, it's not because conservatives have become more conservative. It's because liberals have become more liberal. But what happens with these, with some of these social media, is that if you are a conservative, they've generated these algorithms so that now all you see is other conservative material. And if you're liberal, all you see is other liberal material. And so when you do see something that's from an opposing view, all of a sudden it's really shocking and so on. And so we don't have this kind of dialogue going on like we might have in the past.
Well, Dr. Ken Kaiser, so helpful walking through these things as we're leading up to the midterms here. The pretty big elections coming up this fall, and it's just going to be fascinating to watch where President Trump has sort of blown up our understanding of the Republican Party. You have the Democrats moving further and further left and becoming the party more associated with the Bernie Sanders. It's going to be a fascinating election cycle. I hope you stay with us throughout that, kind of walk our listeners through that. So that's Dr. Ken Kaiser. We are 4 minutes before the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and wrap up this hour. Three minutes before the top of the hour, and Kent, I don't know if you saw some of the headlines. These are some of my favorite kind of headlines. We opened the show with the fact that some burglars managed to do some Mission Impossible rappelling. I don't know if you remember that scene where Tom Cruise, you know, falls into this really secure location, and he's only got an inch above him and the ground. They got away with $100,000 of Apple products, which, again, by our math, was about two Macintosh computers and maybe one iPhone. Did you see this headline?
I saw this. This is amazing. I mean, obviously, well thought out. It sounds like an inside job to me.
It kind of does. And there's part of me, I got to admit, that cheers for the burglars in these situations. I mean, I'm cheering for Tom Cruise and the gang in Mission Impossible. I know it's wrong. I know morally we're way out of bounds, but there's something sort of intriguing. I saw another headline this morning that at Mandalay Bay Casino, there was a massive flood. You can't tell me that Billy Ocean is not actually alive at this point, right? I mean, this is the beginning of Ocean's 15 or 17 or where we are in the cycle.
Yeah, it's hilarious. And in regard to that, first of all, they got away with Apple products, like, you know, bummer for them.
So you are officially not an Apple ecosystem guy either.
Definitely not.
Yeah, you're not part of the Apple Borg. Well, it was a great first hour. We had the Kostenbergers on, Margaret and Andreas talking about parenting, and Dr. Kaiser, thank you again for walking us through so many of these issues in politics and communications. We'll take a break for the top of the hour, and we'll return for the second half of our show and talk about reform political action and a few other items that are in the news.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.